Virginia. William Hill, America's number one sportsbook, is now here. And we have a special 2021 offer to help you bet on all your favorite sports risk-free. Download the William Hill Sportsbook app, and when you sign up, you can get started with a risk-free bet of up to $2,021. Use promo code RADIORF.
Terms and conditions apply. 21 plus only. Gambling problem? Call, text, or chat our confidential and toll-free helpline at 1-888-532-3500.
Let's make it interesting with William Hill Sportsbook.
This is Kim Meyer, host of Choose to Rise. Thanks for listening to the following broadcast on Public House Media.
Hi, this is Emily.
This is Lindsay.
And this is Elizabeth.
Co-hosts of Beauties and Headcanons here on Public House Media. Thanks for listening to the following broadcast on Public House Media.
Once you are done with this episode, we hope you'll come check out our show, Beauties and Headcanons, where we talk nerdy to you about fandoms, fanfiction, and all pop culture for nerds that you can think of. A new show comes out every Friday.
Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes so you never miss an episode of Beauties and Headcanons. Thanks again for checking out the following broadcast on Public House Media.
Welcome, this is Sarah Tuberty.
And this is Nicole Kelly, and welcome to Disarming
Disability! Yeah. Well, welcome. All right, hello, Nicole, how are you?
Sarah, it's rough. I actually, the past couple of days have been more sick than I have been in a really long time, so that's poopy.
Yeah, it is. Being sick's not fun, but sick also happens, so we can't just like ignore that as part of the human experience. Some days really suck, and that's okay.
And that's the attitude that I'm really, really trying to take. I had weekend plans that I was really excited to do that had to be canceled, and so that, you know, just sucked. But also, there was nothing I could do about it. So, unfortunately, the past 3 or 4 days, I've been flat on my back in darkness. And not very exciting, honestly. But yet again, just like you said, it's part of the human experience. I just understood that I just needed to just do what I needed to do to get better. So, I've been drinking a ton of water, trying to eat as best that I can, and today, I actually just took my I'm getting better shower, so
yes.
Looking and working up.
Yay. But I also think there's also just moments of not, like, constant stimulation. I think that we live in a space where there's just tons of stimulation, whether it's, like, stuff that I'm watching or seeing or someone's texting me or I'm answering these emails or I'm watching this video. Like, there's just all of the stimulation that we're being bombarded with. So I just am envisioning you lying on your back, like, in this stillness and this quietness where your body not feeling well, but you're giving yourself that time and that space just to sort of, like, be and exist and think and have process things, whether intentionally or unintentionally. But that makes me think of, like, in yoga where they talk about just, like, letting your mind do what it's going to do. Yeah. I sort of see that just happening in those 4 days where you're not, like, on the schedule or being exposed to all the stimulation. I mean, so that's good. We need that. We need that break time.
Yeah, totally. I mean, stimulation and noise and the light, I was having really bad migraines, so that was definitely out. But also, it's weird how when you're sick, I feel like I wish I could use that time to productively think, but it's almost like the only thing you can think about is how much you hurt and how much you don't want to hurt. So it's weird how the time when you're sick seems really short but really long at the same time, because you're just everything, the way that you're living life is so different. But anyway, that's enough about being sick. You have exciting things to share. Please,
yes.
What have you been up to?
Yes. I am on my fourth podcast in a car. So really, I'm just a what am I, a pod carster?
In the car. I don't know. Yes, I liked it. I liked it.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you. I actually thought about that on my walk over here. But yes, so I'm in a car. I am in Sacramento. I am outside of my sister's house here, and it's just fun. So I'm back in California. My life as a flight attendant stopped on Saturday. I'm on pause now. So, but I'm really excited. So today, and I'm in my car because I just got done defending my doctorate proposal for my doctorate project for the summer. So I'm going to be spending the 4 months here in Sacramento working at my home hospital under the mentorship of my surgeon, Dr. James, at Shriners Hospital here in Sacramento. So I'm just like very excited. And I'll be putting together a resource to help our community specifically of people with congenital limb differences. So I'm developing a resource to specifically support parents. And it's just really cool to be a part of this world and to not be 14. So now I can actually do stuff with everything that I've learned in this experience to help give back and help move all of this education and resources further. And to walk into this hospital as an adult, knowing that I'm going to create something that will have impact. Because the last time I was there, I had graduated as a patient, where I was sort of receiving care. So it's just this really beautiful full circle. And then to have the direct mentorship from my hand surgeon, who is just a very prominent individual within the hand surgery world. It's just like, I'm so happy. And this is sort of like the culmination of everything I've done in my life. And I'm so excited. So I just defended my proposal and I start on Monday. And I just, yes, all of these wonderful things. And I'm so excited because I feel like these are things like this type of content is everything I've been doing in all my side projects. So I'm just really excited that this will be my main project and hoping to continue my life forward. Will this will continue to be my main project and it's no longer my side project.
I'm so happy. So exciting. Congratulations, congratulations, congratulations.
Yeah.
You're going to change the world, and I'm so excited for you to change the world. Oh,
yeah.
So, it's so good.
So many good feelings. So I'm not cold anymore. I'm not wearing millions of clothes. Like, this is all just, I'm just happy. I'm so happy.
You're in California. You're living life. I'm still in Chicago. It's still cold here.
Oh. I'm sorry. I will send you all of my
sentiments. Nah, it's cool.
That's great.
So that's amazing. And I feel like that's a good kind of jump into kind of, well, getting on into reflecting about the episodes we just had. We intentionally brought on people who work as advocates and allies within the disability community. And we wanted to pick their brains on the way that they go about that and the roles in which they feel like they can play within the community and how they go about doing that. Sarah, what initially raises to the top of your brain about conversations we had?
Yeah, I have so many thoughts. I think it's important to sort of differentiate that the individuals that we had specifically in this last two episodes did not necessarily identify as being within the disability community. And these are almost like our quote unquote able-bodied peers that are helping to advocate the efforts of people within the disability community. Whereas a lot of the other people that we've had on our podcast do identify with the disability community. I know we haven't necessarily explicitly said that, like, hi, I'm blah, 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 and I have this thing. Because it doesn't matter. The content that they have produced is both from their own experience in conjunction with all the professional experience they've learned and be able to share that with us, which it's so funny. Like, I didn't actually realize that they identified within the disability community until it came up. And so it's so beautiful to be in a place where that's not necessarily like the focal point of the conversation. But to specifically have these two individuals speak about what it means to be an ally and what it means to be an advocate that do not identify within the disability community themselves, but being able to help and support that. So I think it's important to sort of different, like, give some definitions as far as what that is. And being someone who does identify as being disabled, that there is that lens they bring in taking on that ownership and that pride of having a disability. And so if we're talking about disability rights, like, their voices should be the ones that's at the forefront, in whatever way that that looks like. And sometimes individuals are not, it's not accessible for them to physically say their voice, to physically write their voice, but they can still have their needs communicated in other methods. And it's important as an ally, someone who doesn't identify with that disability, to create that space to listen and to hear what that individual is saying. But it's important, so from those messages from within the disability community themselves, if someone does not identify as being within the disability community, or perhaps even identifies as having a different type of disability, maybe even, I don't know, that could be a question mark. But to be an advocate, I found this definition just through Google, and I wanted to read it. So an advocate is a person who publicly supports a particular cause or policy. So I just think that it's important that that they're supporting a cause or they're supporting a policy. And I think that it's important that the policy and the cause that they are supporting is generated within the specific needs and wants and desires from people who are within the disability community. And it's not advocates are generating things that they feel that that community needs, but rather what are the messages that this community wants to share and what are the needs that they are saying that they want. And I think that advocate is then supporting those needs of the individuals who are vocalizing them.
That totally, yeah, that's what I absolutely pulled from it as well. And even kind of honing in on a portion of what you said, I felt like so strongly kind of like creating the space to listen. I feel like Luca and his work with L'Arche and creating a lived-in experience, and then Patrick, who was talking about, I mean, he schooled me on the fact that you can try to educate people with data and numbers all day long, and that's not the way that, that it will get through to them. I guess in my brain, that realization of just kind of being in community together and sharing in community really is the way to open up that channel. And I think the people who are going to be good advocates and really, really good allies specifically for disability will understand that. And will understand that there's a difference in those roles. And that's not something that's insulting, that that is just the way that it should and does work. Yeah. Does that make any sense, what I just said?
Yeah, absolutely. It's fun because it makes me think of a conversation that we had in my OT program, where we really want to look at who the person is, what does that person want to do, what are their supports, what are their barriers, and how can we help that person achieve what they want to achieve. So it's really important. We had this conversation about an individual who had who was using a wheelchair and had difficulty with fine motor skills, and this OT, it was a case study, I think. I could also be totally saying this wrong, but this is what I remember, so we're gonna go with it, with that understanding. But it was an individual, so they went into her home and they saw that she was having difficulty eating at the table, and she was being fed by a caregiver. So the OT, like, I mean, feeding is one of like a highlight, like hallmarks of what OT can do. And there's so many different adaptable feeding utensils. So the OT was like, great, I'm going to help this individual with feeding because I know that that's something that I can do. And I know that we can make this whole thing better with all my tools and all my strategies. But the family didn't want that. Like, the family, both the individual who was that had the disability and the family member, like, that was a shared experience that they enjoyed having together. That mealtime was really important for them, and that was a really important role for both of them to be in that space together. And neither one of them were interested on exploring any feeding things. They rather needed help with bathing. And so then that OT, like, even though there's so many things that we can do to help support that or make that better, there's no point in developing an entire intervention plan and, you know, forcing these individuals, if you will, to try all these adaptive feedings. And then the OT was like, no, like, I'll just show you, it'll be great. And they're like, no, we don't want that. Like, even though that's an area of help, if you will, that's an area in which that individual can have more independence on an activity they want, but that's not what they wanted. They wanted rather help with an entirely different task. And so I just think of that, that it's really easy to be someone who is a helper and to be someone who thinks that they're being an advocate and an ally by seeing, oh, I see that these are the needs in this community and I'm going to use my voice and my social power and my social media accounts or whatever that person has that are beneficial for them. And I'm seeing through my perspective of someone who does not have this disability as that this is what this need is, and I'm going to help change this need, or I'm going to help create messaging to bring awareness to this need, when that isn't necessarily a need that is from within the community itself.
Yeah, totally. Totally. That's what I feel too. You know, I feel like, so looking in my life, I feel like the best person who has been the best ally to me is my prosthetist, David Rotter. He is just, first of all, a rock star of a human being. You go into his office and he's listening to smooth jazz and just is ready to just, like, talk about life. And he's just an amazing person. But getting past the layer of him being an amazing person in general, when you are with him and he is talking about prosthetic devices and using them, he is the most realistic man you'll ever meet. The first thing he'll say to you when you start talking about prosthetic devices with you is, this is a tool in mm-hmm. this state. This is a tool. It's unrealistic to think you're going to use it in every situation. It's unrealistic to think you're going to wear it from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. You know, he is the first person to kind of set the realities. And then with that knowledge, he'll listen to what you actually want and need, and then you can go forward from there. So like right now I'm really excited, a lifting arm so I can try to lift weights. That's something I've never done.
Right.
Yeah, so it's been in his office, because you have to go multiple times to to be in there with him and specifically be creating this something that works. But it's so, he listens to, no, that's too tight. I want to be able to do this type of lifting. Like, his whole job is to listen and then figure out how to make the device best work for you and your lifestyle.
Yes.
I feel so heard and so appreciated when I'm in his office and I walk out with a tool that makes my life better. It's
yay!
Everybody be him. Everybody be David Rotter.
Well, I think that's important to highlight too, because people within the disability community may not know the things they need, right? Like, you may not know all the different prosthetic devices. You may not know, actually, you don't know. I'm just going to say that. You don't know that. You can't possibly know.
No, I don't.
Because only someone who's trained in that profession could possibly know all of the different devices, all what each device is rated for, like the, you know, like all these different tools. So of course you as a person with disability you don't have access to all that information, right? You don't need to have access to all that information. But you need the person with the information to be an appropriate helper and to hear you, provide space to listen to what you're saying, be able to interpret what you're saying, being able to repeat it back to you, making sure that seeking that validation or verification that what he heard was correct. And in fact, what you want, and then can develop a tool or a strategy or a problem or a message, whatever, that then fits that need. Because it, of course, it's unrealistic to assume that everybody with disabilities knows the exact way that they need everything to happen. A lot of people may or may not do in that given circumstance, but we know what we need, right? We don't know necessarily all the solutions, but we know our bodies, we know our minds, we know what we want to be able to do and what we need in order to get there. And we can't do it all on our own. So yes, I want to clarify and make sure that is also part of the messaging that I'm sharing. That, like, we don't have all of the answers and we need help finding the answers, but we don't want your answers. We want our answers together. Like, I want an answer that's going to be able to fit my needs, not one that's superimposed on me based on what someone else thinks that I'm going to want and need without giving me the moment to share or talk about it.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. And I know that, just kind of to take a step broader, of course, we are talking specifically from our vantage point of having one hand. You know, we're two white women in our 20s, have a limb difference. But stepping outside that scope, I know just even messaging and ways that the disability community as a whole is figuring out messaging is ever changing, because the needs of every individual specific disability also is different. Yeah. And just what Candace said in our intersectionality conversation, she was saying, well, creating that space, that's what's coming, that keeps coming to the top of my head. Like, are you making space for the diversity that you need to make space for? And are you listening to all of the voices? Are you representing all of the voices and bringing the appropriate experts and the appropriate people and tools to the table in order to find some sort of solution? Yeah. It takes a whole army of people filling these very specific roles in order to move kind of this thing forward. That is our community, I guess.
Yeah, and I know everyone's at a different moment within their disability spectrum. And I believe this could be, again, quoted inaccurately, but I believe that it was that article. It was the article on Special that Ryan O'Neill McConnell. Oh, crap. What's his name? I don't know. Ryan wrote on his the Special is the it's the show that he put on Netflix that is sort of, it's an individual who has CP. Ryan O'Neill, right?
I actually don't know his last name.
Dang it. I'm pretty sure it's an O. Anyway, but we can change that later. And so it was based on a book that he wrote called Special and Other Lies That We Tell Ourselves. And there was an article that was written as an interview with him that he was sort of sharing in the like media posts about promoting his series that he was a part of and in there he talked about coming out of the disability closet. So I know that like there's a part of the journey that people have where it's like accepting this term disability and accepting what it means to be someone who is disabled, and then some people within the disability community say that they're disabled, blah blah blah. I'm very like pro person first language because I come from healthcare, so I know that what's happening is a very medical model, so we're trying to like create that people are people and not sort of diagnoses. So in response to that, I use a lot of the person first language, but other individuals like find that really annoying and irritating and they want to be like the disabled blah blah blah. And so I know that we have this different interaction with our language, and again messaging throughout the entire disability community is a work in progress, and there's different people who have different needs everywhere within
that. I think it's okay for it to be dynamic, and I think it's okay for it to be, I'm going to say the word changing, but that's not quite the right word, because I think it's always consistently the same, that our needs, we have rights to have the same basic functioning needs that the rest of everybody else has. I think that's always the root of the conversation at hand. But also when addressing pride, I think you're absolutely right. And I think also a part of that allyship that people can have is listening in on those conversations. And Patrick talked about it. He talked about coming out of the closet, and that it's something you need to be careful about who you're coming out of the closet to. Because once you come out with your disability pride, you know, there's no going back. And that's it's a beautiful thing. It's an empowering thing. But also, it is a identity.
And I think that goes back to what we were talking about with privacy, right? Privacy with our first episode with Dr. Kramer, in that he was talking about that like people's acts right to privacy, and that like if someone's looking you up for a job, Nikki or me, whatever, that they can look at all my social media and see that like, oh, I do have this disability as part of me, and even though I didn't necessarily explicitly say that in any of my resume stuff, but that could be a moment of discrimination or not. From that, and knowing that like that is something, unfortunately, that like, yes, taking on disability pride, but there is that component to it, and still want to communicate myself as an effective employee, and that I can actually take on these job roles regardless of the disability.
No, totally. That's actually been, you know, that specific point Dr. John was the one who kind of brought that to the forefront in my brain. And it really had been something I hadn't thought about much. And now, weirdly, I think about it a lot because it does feel really, really unfair that we are in a position where I have to give up my privacy in order to be a part of the conversation. That's not totally true because I know within communities, you know, Chicago has a really strong disability community. I'm so thankful to feel like I'm a part of that. So of course I'm having one-on-one interactions with mentors and peers who I feel like, you know, I'm able to have these conversations with, but still, you know, there's just this greater reach online, and that's real and that's true. And connecting with the people who have strong voices is really real as well. And so it's been hard for me to reconcile which gets importance. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, these one-on-one interactions with people in person are much more validating to me as a person, so you're actually talking to another human, you know?
Right, right, right.
And it's a community that's centrally located to where I am, but at the same time, it's a much smaller reach, right? It's that one-on-one conversation back and forth. So that's, I don't know if any of that made any sense, but it's something that I really have been mulling on and thinking on a lot since we had that conversation with Dr. John.
Yeah. Because I know when we first started talking too, that there was this moment where you're like, there's these two different identities that I hold. There's the Nikki Kelly and then there's the Nicole Kelly, and they're two different people. And they have two different messages, you know, like they're just, they exist in these two different worlds. And yes, but they are both tough. You, like you are both of them. So it's hard to sort of be like, how do I interact in one of these worlds? Because that is a piece of me, right? And then how do I interact in another part of these worlds? That's another piece of me. And there's an entirely different, like, ensuite of level of, not level, but, like, type of professionalism that happens in both of them. And hard to reconcile the two of them, too.
Well, and I don't know if you have experienced this. Okay, so a good example is when I am, I'm trying to think of a specific example for you. Okay, so I'm my boyfriend Nate, we're with his family a lot. He has an amazing family. I'm not just saying that because I know that that's going live to the world. but also the way in which I talk about the disability work that I do to them is very different than if I'm interfacing with somebody who's within the disability world. But which I know that's the way it is, right? Like, you talk business to the people who understand your business. But it's so weird that this section of business is something that's broadcast to the world. So for all I know, they've all read everything that I've ever had to say because it's out there online, right? Like, in theory, they could know so much more about me and about this thing that I talk about a lot without me realizing that, even though when I'm interfacing in real life, those are not the things that we're talking about. And of course I share those parts with them, but it's the way in which I talk about it is very different. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. I think so. In that, because there is that sort of, because people are dynamic. People are really complicated beings, and we all take on these different roles, you know, and that's something, again, I really love from the perspective of OT is we look at people's roles. Like, what is this person's role? What are all the different identities that person takes on, right? Like, an individual with disability, you are a podcaster, you are a girlfriend, you are a roommate, like you're a friend, you're a daughter, like you have all of these different spaces, and each one of those roles has a different set of things that comes along with it, right? And so living within this world that is speaking very publicly about the experiences of having disability, and then being someone who is just a person that walks down the street, right? Like, those are two very different places to be. And of course, a person that walks down the street wants to be welcomed and accepted and not judged critically for, speaking publicly about things. I think about this, I think, because in my, I know in my social media stories, and I say stories meaning like the content I produce, not like my Instagram story, because we have words or different things now. But I know that like I share very hard conversations. Like I have been the most vulnerable on my Instagram. And that was really important for me to liberate myself from these messages because I'm not hiding them and holding on to them anymore. I'm not letting them give me power, I'm not giving them power to limit my perception of myself, right? So me saying them out loud publicly to anyone could look at them, right? And I was anxious. Like I was anxious what people I went to elementary school with would say because I've never shared any of these things with them. I was anxious for some friends that I've been really good friends with to see that because these are themes and concepts that I didn't know how to talk about them. So I didn't talk about them. I didn't have any of the words. I was nowhere near the pride to be able to publicly speak about any of them. So I didn't. And I don't want them to think that they're bad friends because they weren't at all. It was more sort of, how do I find my journey to share these things? So future employers could look up them too, because it's all public. But not having that be then turned and used against me and knowing that like, that's a space I need to reconcile. And I believe in these hard conversations and I believe in the power that people can have and the connection that people can have by reading them, because they can say like, oh, me too. Like, thank you for finally someone saying these things, because that's so important to know that we're not alone. And I think it's really easy to be like, everything's great. I'm normal. Like everything's fine. Everything's wonderful. We're just like any other kid. Where it's like, no. And what really, what is any other kid? Like we all have these pieces of the human experience that are difficult. And I think it's important to acknowledge that they're difficult. Just like you're having a sick weekend. There's nothing wrong with having a sick weekend. It's not the most fun, but sick weekends are important. And they're important to work through and then process and make peace with. And I just believe in the value of connection on that. So that's a choice that I made when I shared that, but know that that's a piece of myself that is no longer private.
Yeah. Well, and just not only, I mean, I guess sharing that you're not only hopefully encouraging and empowering other people to step up and share their narrative. But then also I feel like it's an avenue also to create allies as well. And you know, these people who are generally very interested in being supports and being there to lift up the voices and the things we have to say as well. So, yeah, it's curious to look at this 21st century way of filling all these roles and the way that you can create community and be a part of it. And, you know, it's so many different, again, facets that you can plug into and be a part of, but they all kind of have their different implications that go along with them. So it's just interesting to kind of break those down. But always with, I mean, I feel like the end point is always creating a connection to someone.
Yeah.
Whether that be somebody who's a future ally or whether that be somebody who is an advocate or a person with a fellow person living with disability, that's always the search, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think it's important to acknowledge it. Yes. Yes. All of it. Yes. And hear that connection, because there's pieces of my story that people can connect to without having my experience, right? Because we're humans and we have all these feelings and emotions and struggle with how to be people in the world. And then I think that there is this unique perspective of being someone with a disability and having that an ally be able to see that and help spread that message so that it connects to other people who may be experiencing this too. And I think that's important, but I also think it's important not to generate messaging completely not from the perspective of somebody with disability, but being an outsider looking at it and then sort of commenting on it. I think it's important to hear that messaging from within the disabilities and amplify that messaging and share it and maybe, you know, like, what am I going to say? Like, it's help refine the message. But I think it's important that the overall content of the messages are actually coming from people like things that people have said or communicated in the way that they can communicate. It's important that those, the true messages, like, you know, bullet point statements that we want to convey are coming from within peoples of the disability community rather than that messages that's been superimposed because, that's what we think that we want. So I just think it's really important to be mindful. And I was really thinking about your, journey with your prosthetist too, in that like you're going for these multiple meetings. So you're like, the initial conversation is, what do you want to be able to do that you cannot do right now as effectively? And then like, these are potential suggestions. Let's try them on. Let's get feedback. Like, this is what I heard you saying. This is what I picked and chose for you. Does this work for you? Great. If it doesn't, like, let's find a new one. So I think it's important to include people with disabilities throughout that entirety of the conversation, just to make sure that people without disabilities are, like, truly understanding what that message was, and then being able to amplify it from there.
Totally. I totally agree with everything you just said. Yeah, I do. And I really, it takes a village to move messaging along and to amplify the voices. And, you know, everybody has a part to play. I come from a theater background, right? Mm-hmm. Like, everybody has a role, and those roles are well defined, and you have a certain costume that you wear and certain mm-hmm. lines that you play. And I think doing the homework to understand where you fall within this community is so important to understanding how you can be of help. Because yeah. if you haven't done that homework, you could be actually unintentionally hurting the community.
Yeah.
And I don't think that anybody's intention is ever to do that, I don't think. But my I've been reflecting since I'm almost turning 29 on the thing that I learned this year. What was the yes. number one thing? And the number one thing I learned in my 28th year of life was that good intention does not always mean good.
Yeah.
You know, so like, someone can have really, really awesome intention, but that doesn't mean that what they're actually producing or doing, saying, is good. And so just someone being able to pause and do the homework and make sure, put yourself in check to make sure that you actually are doing something that's helpful.
Right. Yeah. And I know I said messaging a lot. I think I just was perseverating on messaging there, but it's really anything. It's building a space. It's helping create policy. It's helping change policy. Like, anything that individuals with disabilities need. It's helping someone find an alternative strategy or building a tool from someone. It's any of those gamuts is how an individual can be an advocate. So I really appreciate how you said that we all have a role to play and a costume to put on, and even like a job within that. It's not necessarily everyone on theater. It's everyone. It could be people sitting and watching the production and supporting yeah. the production that way. It's people who are doing all of the lighting and the sound and the background work and who made stuff here and there. You know, it's not just the people on the stage. And there's absolutely a whole world of advocates who are not on stage. They're all of the other support that happens everywhere else, that don't necessarily get that stage limelight, if you will, but are still crucial components of it.
But right, but the actors and the players on stage should be the people with disabilities. Yes. You know, and then your backstage crew that should be the people providing tools. Those should be your doctors. Those should be your prosthetists. Those should be the other supports.
Mothers and fathers.
Yes. Yeah, mothers and fathers and aunts
and siblings
and yes, yes, people who are more intimately
friends,
much more
yeah.
with the experience. And then you're right, then there are the audience members, the people who maybe don't necessarily interact with it on a daily basis, but also agree that disability rights are civil rights and they want to yes. be on to help push that along. You know, it's so important. So yeah, I think I'm really, really thankful for the two guests that we pulled and had. I just thought they had such wisdom, and mm-hmm. I could listen to Luca talk all day long, for real.
I know.
He's such a fire. Yes. So I felt like both of them brought such quality, and in addition, I just think that the thing that I pulled, that I'm just reiterating now kind of what I said before, that they both equally said, was creating that space to listen and be in community with the person.
Yes.
Just being the person to another person, really.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I loved that.
Yes. So beautiful. And that's it. That's it. That's the end of the day. That's how you be an advocate. That's how we need you as an advocate.
That is how we need you as an advocate. Cool. Yeah. So, Sarah, we only have one episode left.
Oh, my gosh. It seems like... Yeah. Oh, you want me to tell them? Got it. Lovely. Oh, so that's it. This concludes our ally chapter.
Sorry.
Yes, I'm also very hungry, so I'm gonna meet up with dinner. I'm gonna have dinner with my sister here, so I'm just like thinking about food, which is lovely. Yes, and so we just finished up our section on allies, and then that's it. This is the end of our first season, which is really exciting. So our next episode, we will recap on everything that we've learned, combining all of the themes for our full first season. We'll sort of do a general, like, what we've learned, how we, both you and I, have grown as people as a just direct result from this podcast. We'll speak a little bit on some of the things that we want to change with the current podcast for next season. We already know. I will not be typing on my keyboard in the car, because I heard that in the audio. I was like, oh my God, why are you typing? And then we'll sort of outline how, like, what we're thinking of doing with season two. There will be a season two, but we will have a break. Both Nikki and I need a pretty significant break to just recap, figure out how we want to move forward with season two to be so much better than season one, because we're always learning and growing.
And also, Sarah needs to graduate.
Yes! I need to graduate.
Sarah needs to finish what she has begun. And also, I mean, an important part of, even though episodes won't be dropping weekly, I think it's important to note that we, behind the scenes, you know, we're really going to be sending out surveys to people who listen to understand how to be better. We're going to be crafting and creating a new arc for the second season. Like, you might not, you know, we're still going to try to be so, like, active on social media and just sharing things, even though there won't be new episodes dropping every week for a summer break. But there absolutely are things that are happening in the background, and we're still going to be chugging along. So we still want this conversation to continue. We just think it's really important to pause and collect and regroup in the way that makes it best for everybody and the podcast.
Yeah. Well, and, like, send us messages, too. We love hearing from you. And I know both of us have been pretty overwhelmed with everything, that we haven't been able to respond to emails as quickly as we've wanted to. But we love everything that everyone's thinking. So if you have ideas on topics you want to cover, or people you'd really like to hear from that sort of are involved in academia or involved in research or along those lines, please let us know. We're really welcome to all of that. We want you to be a part of it, because we want to be good advocates and allies for you.
Yay, we do! That was so good, Sarah!
Right? I was so proud of myself.
Cool, alright, so we'll see you all next week then.
I want to say thank you for spending part of your day with us. We want to give special thanks to our network, Public House Media, for our intro beats, Jason Barnes at Cybernetics, for our logo art, Patrice, you can find him at normalpersons.com, and Matt Meldrum and Ryan Louie, our two-handed technical team. Bye!
Disarming disability.